This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and the coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Welcome to Dear Prudence. I'm your Prudence, Janae Desmond-Harris. Today, we'll be discussing how much physical affection is appropriate with people who are not your partner, and how to cope when you and your boyfriend disagree about whether to cut off a member of the friend group for having bad opinions. Here to help me out is Gina Sherilis, who covers dating, relationships, and sex for the New York Times. She writes the weekly dating column Third Wheel, where she's reported on everything from whether a relationship can survive mismatched texting styles, to what it means to be solo poly, to what people pack when they think they might end up spending the night at a date's house. Welcome, Gina.
Hi, Janae. Thanks so much for having me.
I'm so excited to have you here. And the first thing I want to do before we get into the letters is ask you for one piece of unsolicited advice. It could be about your area of reporting expertise, or it could just be something you have been dying to tell people. It's up to you.
So I would... You know what? I do think this applies to dating and relationships, but it can apply to all different areas of life. One thing that I'm trying to practice myself is to remember that the more control you try to have over a situation, the less you'll likely have. So, you know, just remembering to let go. And as it pertains to dating and relationships, I think a lot of people have expectations of how they want their romance lives to go, but it's going to have to go with the flow. Be open to attracting new things.
I love that. It reminds me of something my friend Hannah said recently, which is that her mantra is, whatever is for me won't miss me. Yeah,
don't stress too much about it.
Trying to manipulate situations, stressing about stuff. If you can get yourself to believe that, which is not the easiest.
No.
But if you can embrace it, it feels really good.
It feels really good. Yeah, like I am a little neurotic type A like type. So I do try to gain control over things in my life, but I think I've been doing a much better job with just letting things flow. So that's my lesson. That's my tip.
Awesome. With that, Gina and I will dive into your questions after a short break. Can't get enough, Dear Prudence? Then you should definitely join Slate Plus, Slate's membership program. You'll get to hear me answer an extra question every week just for members. With your subscription, you get ad-free listening across the Slate network and unlimited reading on the Slate site, including all Dear Prudence columns, past and present. Go to slate.com/prudyplus to sign up. It's just $15 for your first 3 months. Again, that's slate.com/prudyplus. Welcome back. You're listening to Dear Prudence, and I'm here with Gina Sherilis. Let's get started with our first letter. It's titled Pretty Problematic.
My husband, 37 male, and I, 37 female, have been married for more than 4 years, together for 7. Before I met him, I was fairly thin and dating very attractive, successful men. One night, I started re-examining my life. I felt like I always had to be made up when around other people. I decided I didn't like that. I stopped dieting, gained about 35 pounds, started dressing much more casually, and I cut back my makeup routine. Shortly after this, I met my now husband. He is a bit bigger than the guys I normally dated, but I really liked that I could dress casually around him and eat whatever I wanted. I didn't feel like I had to be anything. Then, right after we got engaged, I got a health diagnosis, and the treatment caused me to lose most of the weight I had put on when I stopped dieting. I'd started fitting into my old clothes again. I knew I didn't want to go back to my old wardrobe because it was just too much, but I realized my post-weight gain wardrobe just didn't look as good as I would like. So I finally found a nice medium between casual slash comfy clothes and looking nice. The one thing I just didn't want to go back to was makeup. So now I just curl my eyelashes, rub my cheeks to get them rosy, and maybe put on some tinted lip balm. I will do a full face of makeup for special occasions, but not regularly. We were out this weekend with our friends, and one of my friends asked a question about makeup. I answered it, which surprised this friend, who I met recently and hasn't seen me in much makeup. I explained how I used to wear a lot of makeup. I noticed my husband started acting a little strange, but thought nothing of it. When we got home, he asked me why I stopped wearing so much makeup. I told him, and he said he thought I had, quote, let myself go, unquote, and didn't care enough about him to look nice sometimes. I was shocked. I put way more effort into my appearance than he does, and even more than when we met, just not makeup. I'm feeling very, very self-conscious right now. I am absolutely attracted to this man. But after I introduced him to my friends, a couple of them got very drunkenly honest and told me they thought I was much hotter than him. I don't think I'm much hotter, but I do think I'm more attractive and look more put together, even without makeup. And I'm starting to realize I think that influenced my reason to stay with him. I figured I would never have to worry about my looks again if I married him. I honestly just don't know where to go from here. I don't feel like I can tell him these thoughts because I have to admit I think I'm better looking than him. I also have to deal with the fact that I somehow ended up with a man who expects more from my looks than I do. I really need some advice.
This letter just made my head spin. I feel like it's just a tornado of gendered expectations, fat phobia, superficial values coming from both sides.
And manipulation. Yeah, I think, 100%. I think this letter writer is not being totally honest with herself about how she might be using her husband.
Say more.
I think there was a part of it where she said, I felt like I always had to be made up when around other people. And I don't doubt that she's attracted to her husband. I believe her when she said this. But when she said that, you know, she liked that she could dress casually around him and basically not try, it didn't seem like, you know, the reason behind that was because he isn't superficial and he loves her for who she is. It seemed like she was doing that because she's like, well, he's just a schlub.
Because he deserves less.
He deserves less. Like, I'm like, you know, straight out the womb, hot as hell. So like, I don't have to try hard with him. And that's how she came off. And I'm like, oh, that's so shallow. And it's such a weird foundation to have like your relationship and your marriage stand on. Like, you married this person because you were like, I don't have to try with them.
Right. And I think that's what gave me a headache about it, is that I don't have to try is a great feeling to have. But the reason for the feeling here is so disturbing. It's not, I don't have to try because he sees me for who I am and we connect on an emotional level. We love each other's souls and personalities. It's, I don't have to try because he looks worse than other people I've dated and he deserves less effort from me and he should be happy with whatever he gets because, by the way, not even trying, I still look better than him.
Yeah. And she tries to justify it by saying like, well, you know, my drunk friends even said he was ugly. So like, it's not just me. That is so insane.
First of all, what kind of friend goes, yeah, it was nice meeting your boyfriend. By the way, he's ugly and you're so much hotter than him. What's going on?
Yeah, I think that's why she mentioned that they were drunk. Mm-hmm. But I honestly think that happens. I feel like I personally have a hard rule that like, we shouldn't comment on our friends' partners' appearances. Like, if we feel like there is a red flag in their personality or their behavior or a compatibility thing, because you know your friend, cool, share it. But it's not their business whether or not you think they're cute.
Right.
But you can tell like she cares a lot about it. She cares about appearances. And we actually don't even know the context behind that. Like, did your friends just randomly admit that they thought you were hotter than him? What was the conversation like before that? Where did you ask them yourself?
That's such a good question, because this is a person who thinks a lot about her appearance and the social capital that comes with it and how she compares to other people. So I think you're onto something, that maybe the friends didn't bring it up out of nowhere.
But I don't think he's perfect either.
No.
He sees her like, you know, she randomly decides to get all dolled up and he's like, well, I just thought you let yourself go. You never do that for me. It's like, so he had that expectation. I don't know why he didn't vocalize it before, but she's looking for advice. So, I mean, I don't know. It seems like they clearly have a lot to discuss, but I think she first has to really admit to herself, you know, what really attracted you to this man? Mm-hmm. From where I'm standing, it seems as though you thought he was a safe bet because you see yourself as hotter than him. And like you said, Janae, therefore he's less deserving of you trying hard because you woke up like this, essentially.
I'm glad you made the point about how he's not completely right either. In fact, he's very wrong. The first thing in my notes is you never want to tell your spouse you've let yourself go. I don't care if they haven't showered for 2 months. Don't tell someone you've let yourself go unless you have one of those weird relationships that's just based on brutal honesty. So I absolutely understand the letter writer having a negative reaction to that. Also, Gina, like you said, there's a crack in the foundation of this relationship. It's based on something that wasn't healthy and wasn't respectful. And I think the emotion behind his "you've let yourself go" statement was tapping into his awareness of that a little bit. Maybe behind that statement was him realizing, you don't think I deserve for you to try as much as other people do. And he's married to this letter writer. He knows how much she thinks about looks and appearance and measuring herself against others. He probably gets on some level that she doesn't think she has to try because he's not worthy of effort. If they were dating, I would just tell them to break up. Because like you said, there's a crack in the foundation. We didn't start from a good place here. You're not together for a great reason, but they're married. They've been together for a long time. I don't know. Do you think there's a way to repair this?
I think there is. I don't think it's a coincidence that after she's, you know, stopped dieting, gained 35 pounds and stopped wearing makeup, she met her now husband. I don't think that's a coincidence. I think that she probably was thinking, okay, the guys who I dated when I was thin, who were attractive, won't like me in this body. Mm-hmm. So I think that the first thing that she needs to do is just accept. I don't think that even though she allowed herself to stop dieting, I don't think that she fully accepted her new body. Mm-hmm. I think that she became content with it because, you know, there was a man out there who was showing her love. Mm-hmm. So I do think that they both, maybe there's a conversation, because I'm not married, so I'm trying to think. It's like, maybe there's a conversation that they need to have about, like, their own body image with themselves first. And then talk to each other in a very transparent and honest way, no matter how much it hurts, and go from there. I don't know what the result of that will be. Maybe it'll be a divorce. Maybe they'll realize, like, oh, we're not actually that physically attracted to each other. We just have body image issues that we need to work with. Mm-hmm. We just have a dysmorphia. Yeah, you know, like, or it could be a thing where it's like they come clean to each other. They're honest. They communicate. They apologize. And they start on a fresh, clean slate where they can now move forward and actually repair some of these, like, twisted ideas of how they view each other. It's a lot.
So I'm actually against honesty in this situation. I don't think she should ever be transparent about, yeah, you know what, I did let myself go, and it's because you look the way you look, and let's be honest, I still look better than you. You know, we're not equally yoked here. I think maybe what she could say to him is something like, so what you said the other day hurt me. Yes, I have stopped wearing makeup. It's been over 10 years. It's not unusual for people's habits and appearance to change over time. I'm doing what feels good to me now. It's not a reflection of how I feel about you. It's a little white lie, but we're just going to go with it. So yeah, it really hurt my feelings for you to say I let myself go. But maybe we can both start trying for each other. Maybe we can go out once a week or once a month and you can wear something I like better. Or I don't know. Honestly, Gina, I don't know. When you start nitpicking each other, it just, or maybe there's a different angle that's take the physical stuff off the table and you need to, like, reestablish your connection based on the non-physical stuff. If you take out looks completely, if you're both blind, what do you love about each other? And what can you do to shore that up and strengthen that, so that
that's a good idea.
This appearance stuff sort of diminishes in intensity and value a little bit. I'm imagining them going to one of those, like, dating coaches where you, like, sit and stare directly in each other's eyes for 2 hours or something.
Yeah, or even, like, I like what you said. It's like reminding yourself why you love them aside from the physical stuff, even if it's a list of, like, he, you know, I love you because of this, and not because of what he or she does, or, you know, what they like provide or how they make you feel, but what makes them great, like, you know, kind of pouring back into them in that way. And I guess for me, I meant being honest in the sense that she should be honest with him. I don't know. From my POV, it seems like this woman has views about herself that she has not unpacked yet. And mm-hmm. I think that if she were to have an honest conversation with him about it, not necessarily an honest conversation about how she sees him or that she thinks that, oh, you know, I think I'm just much better looking than you. You should be so happy a girl like me would even mm-hmm. marry a guy like you. Less of that and more like, because she got defensive. She was shocked when he was like, I thought you let yourself go. And I think that was her opportunity to really just get into, well, first, he should never have said that, like you said, and he should apologize immediately after. Mm-hmm. But I think that's a good opportunity for her to then really explain to him why she stopped doing that. It mm-hmm. wasn't because, you know, she didn't care enough about him to look good, but it was because she found herself in a very toxic dieting cycle that was messing with her self-image. And I don't think that, I'm not getting the sense that she's been real to herself about that, because she still has these very like messed up superficial views about her body. Mm-hmm. So I think that, and I think he does too. I think they both are dealing with, I mean, she said it too. I think she said she was feeling self-conscious. So I think that they need to have a conversation about that. She shouldn't insult him and he shouldn't insult her or nitpick, you know, their physicalities. But I don't know. I think there's a lot more here than just like, oh, and I just didn't care what people thought about me anymore. So I stopped dieting. I let myself go. Diets are just hard to keep up with. Period.
Absolutely. She stopped all the practices of maintaining quote unquote beauty, but she didn't change the mm-hmm. underlying feelings. She still feels perfectly that physical put. Beauty
yes,
is
exactly.
important and makes you valuable. She's just choosing to focus on it a little less, but she needs to change her thoughts about how it relates to her value as a person and a partner. And maybe a lot of this is done in therapy, not with her husband.
Exactly. So it's like the first step is like figuring that out for yourself, because yeah, that was so, I love the way you put that. That's exactly it. It's like you're projecting and you're like, well, you don't deserve that. So how did you feel when you were dating these attractive men? Mm. Is that why you were trying so hard to keep up with them? Did you feel like if you weren't dieting like crazy and keeping the 35 pounds off that they would have left you? Like, that's nothing to build a relationship off of. And she went into this relationship thinking that, I don't know if he went into it thinking the same, but he clearly had some feelings about her self-image. I mean, her yeah. image as well, because he's like, well, you never tried for me. So yeah, they both have some work to do.
Yeah. And do it now before you're 10 or 15 years down the road and you're both a lot older. And by conventional standards, both of your looks are out the window. What's going to be left when neither one of you looks good at all? So
true.
Think about that. You're listening to the Dear Prudence Show, and when we come back, we'll be reading more of your letters. Stay with us. Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never frozen meal is chef crafted, dietitian approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Also, discover more than 60 add-ons every week, like breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, and beverages to help you stay fueled and feel good all day long. What are you waiting for? Get started today and fuel up for your springtime goals. Personally, I love the vegan meals. Am I vegan? No. Don't ask me why I chose them, but they're really, really good, and it makes you feel like at least you know you ate some vegetables for the day. Get chef-prepared meals on the table in 2 minutes with Factor's ready-to-eat meals so you can get back to doing what you love this spring. Looking for gourmet meals? Try meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, and asparagus. Factor meals eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, or cleaning up. Simply heat and savor the good stuff. We're celebrating Earth Day all month long. Look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for our lowest carbon footprint meals. Head to factormeals.com/prudence50. and use the code PRUDENCE50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code PRUDENCE50 at factormeals.com/PRUDENCE50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. The best way to learn a language? Immersion. Living where the language is spoken and using it every day. But if that's not in the cards this year, you can still learn a language the second best way. And that's with Babbel. I love how easy it is to use. And as a person who can be really self-conscious about making mistakes, I love that I don't have to actually talk to a real human while I'm still working on my vocabulary and my accent. Be a better you in 2024 with Babbel, the science-based language-driven learning app that actually works. Don't pay hundreds of dollars for private tutors or waste hours on apps that don't really help you speak the language. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Babbel's designed by real people for real conversations. Babbel's tips and tools are approachable, accessible, and rooted in real-life situations. They're delivered with conversation-based teaching, so you're ready to practice what you've learned in the real world. Babbel has over 16 million subscriptions sold. Plus, all of Babbel's 14 award-winning language courses are backed by their 20-day money-back guarantee. Here's a special limited-time deal for our listeners. Right now, get 55% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners, at babbel.com/prudy. Get 55% off at babbel.com/prudy, spelled babbel.com/prudy. Rules and restrictions may apply. Welcome back to Dear Prudence. I'm here with my guest Gina to answer your letters, and the next one is titled Feeling Friendless.
I'm on the verge of breaking up with my boyfriend and ditching my friend group. I'm part of a small group of people who hang out, make short films, and often travel together. But a couple years ago, I had a massive falling out with a former member of the group, Robin. She'd been erratic and unkind before, but the final straw for me was her arguing against the boycott of an event run by someone who had been credibly accused of sexual assault because, in her words, women make up fake accusations all the time. I'm a survivor. Something we've talked about at length when she had made similar statements in the past. So she knew what she was saying to me. It was incredibly triggering for me and led to a screaming fight when she kept doubling down. She never apologized and kept insisting I misunderstood her. Most of our mutual friends came down on my side, but struggled to understand that I cannot be around her. I spent a lot of time trying to explain my trauma and why I find her so unbearable to be around. My mom didn't believe me when I told her what her boyfriend had been doing to me, and I was forced to be around him because doing otherwise would have been impolite. Now, I feel like I'm expected to do the same with Robin. My boyfriend recently completed a project that she had a small part in, and he wants to invite her to the premiere. He feels like it'll be showing off everything we accomplished. To me, it feels like giving her a pass for her bad actions. I told him that if she goes, I won't. But his response is that I can't avoid her forever. That I'm allowing her to steal my joy by skipping things I know she's attending. I feel like I can't win. Either I'm missing out or I'm stressing out. And I don't want to do either. It also makes me resent my friends and my boyfriend, who don't have the balls to just cut her out, even though they say they agree with me.
So I think the letter writer's position is totally reasonable, especially given her trauma and her need to protect herself.
100%.
Do whatever you have to do and don't let anyone tell you you can't. I also think her boyfriend makes some decent points. I also think his approach is fair, that you don't necessarily have to cut people off 100% because they've said one thing that you think is really problematic. But do you know what I think is so, so, so key to relationships? You've got to hate the same people. You have to hate the same people. You have to naturally hate the same people, or you have to really easily radicalize each other to hate the same people.
Yeah, it shouldn't take that much convincing.
Right, exactly. And it doesn't mean there's a certain set of people who deserve to be hated and cut off and a certain set that don't. You've got to agree as a couple, because first of all, it feels really good to be supported. when you don't like someone and don't want to be around them. And it feels, as we know from this letter, it's really painful and offensive when someone doesn't get behind you on that. And for practical reasons, if you're going to be living a life together, you have to decide who's in your space. No one wants to have weekly fights about who we're going to hang out with, who gets to come over. You have your friends I don't talk to because I don't like them. That just won't work. So I think it's actually a slight sign of incompatibility that they're not seeing Robin the same way.
I agree 100%. I feel so bad for this letter writer because I can tell just by her mentioning briefly that her mom would force her to hang out with the boyfriend that made her uncomfortable because it would be impolite, that she really is trying to resist those people-pleasing expectations mm-hmm. and that what Robin did to her triggered her in some way. And she expects support from her boyfriend and her friends, which is valid. And yeah, I'm of the mindset that, like, you know, it's difficult because my first reaction, I'm not going to lie, listening to this was like, yeah, cut her off and like, mm-hmm. maybe like to Robin, because if you're a survivor, if sexual assault is something that affected you so directly and you have a friend who will say things like, you know, women make up fake accusations all the time. Like, of course, people lie. We know that. But that can be a very triggering statement for someone who survived sexual assault, who might have been doubted before in the past. Yeah, I can't lie. My first thought was like, yeah, this person doesn't need to be in your life if they're going to make you uncomfortable. And your friends shouldn't expect you to share space with that person. They've moved into a different category of friendship. But I do hear what you're saying as well. Like, if this is a premiere for what it was, a project? Mm-hmm. And it was a premiere that she'd be attending because she played a small part of it. It's like, if this is, I don't know too much about this to know why his response was that she can't avoid this woman forever. Mm-hmm. But if that's the case, then like you said, they need to decide like how big of a part this woman is going to be in our lives.
Right.
Because if the letter writer is like, I want no parts. I don't want to see her. I don't want to breathe the same air. And he's like, oh, you know, if we're at some big award show or an event or a festival, then, you know, you just have to deal with her. Then, yeah, it's a huge incompatibility issue. Because if her opinion was enough to make her feel that uncomfortable, mm-hmm. then I don't know if there's a way to repair that unless she actually sits down with Robin and, you know, without the shouting, without the yelling, they're able to come to an understanding, Robin can apologize, and they can fix it. If they can't, then the expectation that her friends and her boyfriend have, I think, it's impossible.
I think you're right. I hate to see the letter writer losing her whole friend group over this. The boyfriend is one thing, they come and go.
Yeah.
But she writes that I'm on the verge of breaking up with my boyfriend and ditching my friend group. And I'm just not sure it's a happy ending for her. Being a survivor, already having this trauma to deal with, and then being isolated as well.
That's true.
Of course, there are new friends to be had out there. There's endless people in the world.
Totally.
But breaking up with a whole core group of friends is a big life change, and that would be really, really hard and could be really lonely. So I just wonder if there might be a middle ground that's not embracing Robin, not forgiving Robin, not accepting Robin, but also not leaving the friend group or completely refusing to go to events. Could we just implement the extreme cold shoulder? Not speaking to her, not listening to her.
Well, what did she say? She said they hang out, they travel together, and they're mm-hmm. a small group. I don't know if that, yeah, I think that might be hard.
Yeah.
And I see that she said, like, you know, most of their mutual friends were on her side, but they struggle to understand why they can't be around her. She didn't include this in this letter, but I wish she explained why. Like, mm-hmm. What's so great about Robin? She
right.
said, like, you know, she'd been erratic and unkind before. Mm-hmm. She really just kind of focuses on the negatives about this person. But I'm just so curious why it's so hard for her friends to cut her off. Like, what is she
That's
like?
That's a really good question.
Yeah. Is she paying for everything? Is she really kind? Is there a Jekyll and Hyde situation mm-hmm. happening? Like, I know that people have a lot of strong opinions on when it comes to sexual assault, when it comes to accusations and allegations of sexual assault. And I'd be curious to know her friend's justification for still keeping Robin around.
If I had to guess, I bet it's just we have this group. We need a certain number of warm bodies to be at the event, mm-hmm. to be on the trip. You know, she's fun. She's always been there.
And that might be Robin's core group as well. So they might not want to abandon her. Mm-hmm. Like, because the same way you describe, like, yeah, losing your whole friend group at any age is extremely isolating. And it's really tough to dig yourself out of that. Like, it'll take a long time to rebuild. So they might be feeling, they might have empathy there where they're like, well, we don't want to cut her off because then who will she have? Even though, because we all, I think on varying levels, we all just have friends in our lives who aren't for everyone. But we find reasons to love them and we deal with their shit. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't be surprised if that's what's happening with Robin here.
Do you feel like there's a time when you kind of age out of the friend group and move toward more individual friendships? I think that happened for me a little. So obviously everyone in high school or college has a friend group, or most of us do. Mm-hmm. But sometimes as you get older, you might reflect on that group and realize, okay, we were all thrown together because of circumstances, living in the same dorm or working in the same office or whatever it was, and we were pretty young. And maybe we all wouldn't have chosen each other individually based on our individual qualities and compatibility. And so maybe, letter writer, if you can get on board of that way of thinking about friendships and transitions, maybe this is a moment for you to start to transition to a handpicked set of friends who really reflect your values and really treat you well, rather than this group that's existed for a while and that is giving you signs of mismatch and of not really respecting you and treating you the way you want to be treated. So I'm convinced now that it's okay to move away from the group, but I just want to say at least have one or two other people in place to replace these relationships, for company and for understanding. And hopefully they're deeper connections and more compatible connections.
Yeah, I agree with that. There have been points in my life where I was like the floater friend. Mm-hmm. Like I was a part of different like friend groups that from my POV seemed a lot closer, mm-hmm. like in their group, but they were very welcoming of me. Like we could hang out. And I remember really questioning that or thinking, is there something wrong with me? But then after doing some more like self-examination, I realized like, no, I do have an appetite for different types of friendships, mm-hmm. for different types of people in my life. And I think sometimes when you do find yourself exclusively part of one friend group, she could even think of it in the way of like, that's keeping me from discovering new things, new ways of thinking,
right.
meeting people who are more aligned in my thinking and want to do things that I want to do. Because oftentimes when you're just in one friend group, if you want to do something, say it's rock climbing and they don't want to do it, mm-hmm. then if you're the type of person that needs someone to do things, yeah, you're stuck. Mm-hmm. And so I realized like, while I was feeling bad about not having gone on like a girl's trip as an adult or something like that, I'm like, actually, like there are some plus sides to how I've operated. And I do feel like I'm a part of groups now. But yeah, I don't think it's the end of the world if she decides to maybe distance herself from them or fill her time with the company of other people. I don't mm-hmm. think necessarily a bad thing. She doesn't have to cut them off completely or ghost. I think this could even be the opportunity to have a conversation with them and just say like, hey, this is where I'm at. This is why I've been MIA because of this thing. You know, don't just soft ghost or anything like that. With her boyfriend, I think I agree with you 100% that like if they don't, yeah, I love that. If they don't find a way to hate the same people, yeah. then they are... they're kind of screwed.
It's not going to work. Sorry. Yeah, I love how we just talked all about friendship. We weren't even worried about the boyfriend anymore because he can obviously go.
Because we're like,
Fire up Tinder again. You'll be fine. You'll find someone else.
And there are ways to find new friends. There's so many, like, it's not just Bumble Friends is like one resource or like an app that you can find friends. There's so many like coffee date apps, like platonic date apps that she can look into. She can join clubs in mm-hmm. her area. She can learn a new language in person and meet people that like, there's so many different ways. And I think that like, as we get older, sometimes we can feel stuck with the friend group that we have because without settings like school, you know, or a workplace, it's like, where do you even find new friends? Mm-hmm. But you just have to be proactive about it the same way you are about dating. You can make new friends in your 30s and your 40s and your 50s and so on.
You really can. Oh, one last mm-hmm. thought, maybe somewhere she could look is to get involved in sexual abuse or assault advocacy. So at least you know that you have the potential to meet a couple of people who see eye to eye to you on this topic and actually get it and don't need to be convinced to support you.
I think that's right.
This is Dear Prudence. We need to take a break, but when we come back, more letters from you and advice from us. Stay tuned.
Adultish is back. And this season, we're talking about standing up and learning how to take a stand for issues on the minds of young people, like book bans.
The book banning side. They have an incredibly well-oiled machine.
Filling in food deserts.
We have three community colleges where we either provide food boxes or an actual operating farmers market.
And what's affecting young people's mental and emotional health.
Pressures of school, friendships, from romantic relationships, pressures from family.
New episodes of Adultish from YR Media drop every Thursday, so subscribe wherever you're listening now.
On Death, Sex, and Money, we feature interviews with you, our community of listeners, getting honest about uncomfortable things.
I developed an illness where it isn't safe for me to drive. A friend once said to me, sex is like air. You don't think about it until you're not getting enough. This is a similar sort of thing if you just replace sex with driving.
Listen to Death, Sex, and Money wherever you get podcasts.
I'm Janae, and you're listening to Dear Prudence. Gina, are you ready for our last letter of the day?
Sure, let's do it.
Okay, it's titled Rock and a Hard Place.
Hi, Prudy. I've been with my boyfriend Joe for 2.5 years. We've got a great relationship. There's lots of intellectual, emotional, and physical chemistry. And I've got this close group of friends. And one of those friends is causing some problems for Joe. Let's call that friend Pete. Pete and I and the rest of our friend group came up through this medical training together, so most of us have trauma bonded in some ways. We're also very physically intimate. No sexual activities are exchanged beyond spouses, but we hug and hold hands and dance. We all respect and love each other dearly. You see, Joe is an incredible lover, but he's not a publicly affectionate guy. And while he's kind and warm to my friends, he's a big introvert, so he hasn't developed those close bonds with them. And that's okay with me. But Joe has a problem with this physical intimacy, particularly when it comes to Pete. Both are alpha males, and I can tell Pete gets a little smug when engaging in this type of affection. I've known Pete for 10 years, and prior to Joe, I was in a chemistryless marriage that I supplemented with these friendships. Again, no sexual stuff, just affection. But Joe's gotten upset, telling me that there's no way this isn't sexually charged, and that he's sick of Pete, quote, pissing on his property. And then he gets upset at the idea of me setting boundaries with Pete, because he doesn't want to acknowledge that this bothers or threatens him. I love my physical relationships with my friends, and it's not worth upsetting Pete over. And I think a frank conversation with Joe would go over just fine after his butthurt behavior, but now I'm told that's not on the table either. So how do I proceed?
I have to be honest, I could feel the excitement, sort of the intoxication, the charge coming off of this letter. Letter writer, you love this situation. I don't even think you want to change it. You love it. You love these two alpha male guys being weird and jealous over you. You love physical affection in front of your partner and how that's kind of a taboo. You love pushing boundaries. You love the drama it's creating with your partner. You love the side drama it's creating with Pete. You love the fantasy of a fight somewhere down the road. I could tell you easy ways to fix this. Tell Pete to stop. Find a partner who's okay with more open, more flexible relationships, a different definition of monogamy. Mm-hmm. But I think the core issue is that you love this. And so I don't know what to tell you.
This is why. Because they mentioned that they were previously in a chemistryless marriage. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. That gives me the sense that like this, you supplemented with these types of friendships. So what are you supplementing? The chemistry, the affection. If you're the kind of person that needs that kind of affection, if you're a PDA, if you're pro PDA, how are you even working with Joe? Like how for 2.5 years? It's so you're almost using your friends for that, and Pete shouldn't exist for that. If that's how you and Pete, he's your friend for a decade. I'm so curious about like you know, how he feels about it.
Right.
Is there a secret pining that's happening on his end where he's biding his time?
There's got to be.
Probably not, because maybe, but you were married once before and you got a divorce. Like, he would have shooted his shot.
Yeah, he missed his window.
After that.
Right.
Yeah, there was that window. And who knows what may have happened. It could have been like very soap opera-y where he was in a relationship and then it couldn't work out. But I do think that, like, if this is something that matters that much to you, if intellectual and emotional and physical chemistry is so important to you, especially the physical chemistry part, how are you with Joe?
Right.
Joe is not giving you that. What is he doing for you? It's like they keep emphasizing that no sexual activity has taken place, but we all know that you don't necessarily have to have sex to achieve intimacy.
And there's a lot of intimacy here.
There's a lot of intimacy here. And also, sorry, the last thing I'll say is, do you like Pete? Is that because they mentioned that it's a close group of friends, but you only called Pete out, and Joe seems to only feel threatened by Pete. So either, you know, he's very insecure, and or he sensed that you're into Pete in a way that you may not be with the close group of friends.
Right.
So, and you said one of whom is causing some problems for Joe, or maybe Pete looks really hot and Joe is just like, damn, this guy's too good looking. I can't keep up. But yeah, I do think that they're really into it. They are with someone who is not meeting a need for them, which is physical chemistry. And they may like Pete, or Pete might like them. Although I think it's them liking Pete. I don't really know if Pete is actually interested.
I mean, Pete's been doing this for 10 years, so I think he's getting something out of it.
True.
And yeah, letter writer, I think you've just got to take a moment to yourself and really be honest with yourself. Is what you want a primary monogamous relationship that's more physically exciting, more charged? Or is what you really want to always have this dynamic of more than one person and kind of playing them against each other? And in that, well, honestly, either way, you probably need to break up with Joe.
Because they said that a conversation is off the table. They were told. Yeah. Conversations off the table. It's just so confusing. So I'm like, so you can't talk about it? Like,
yeah.
What?
So I think if I had to prescribe a plan of action, I would say break up, try dating Pete, just because why not? There's obviously something there. And I just think it's worth exploring. And if that doesn't work, you have two paths ahead of you. One is don't date someone else unless they're enough to satisfy all your needs for physical affection, or negotiate a different kind of relationship where you get to be physically affectionate in front of them and you enjoy the tension and you kind of explore the feelings of jealousy and all the intensity around that that seems to be intoxicating for you. But be clear about what you want. You owe it to yourself and you owe it to whoever you're dating as well.
Totally. And I like that advice, because they said that they've trauma bonded with these friends, which tells me you're not cutting them off.
Right.
Like they're not going anywhere. Like that's your core group. So if you're, if you're not going to, you know, eliminate Pete from your life, then you need to help Joe feel more comfortable if that's the person that you want to be with. Yeah. And like, he's an introvert. Maybe, you know, I get it. Not everyone is interested in like PDA. Not everyone can understand that people can platonically be affectionate to one another. But that is intimacy, and it doesn't have to be sexual to make someone feel some type of way.
Exactly. So. Okay. Those are all the questions we have for this week. It's been fun and hopefully helpful. Gina, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me. That was so much fun.
Really great advice. Keep up with Gina's writing at the New York Times. Read her weekly dating column, Third Wheel, where she explores the delights and horrors of sex, dating, and relationships. Do you need help getting along with partners, relatives, coworkers, and people in general? Write to me. Go to slate.com/prudy. That's slate.com/PRUDIE. The Dear Prudence column publishes every Thursday.
If you'd like to hear your question answered on the podcast, we are looking for letter writers who would be comfortable recording their questions for the show. You can stay anonymous.
Dear Prudence is produced by Sierra Spragley Ricks and me, Janae Desmond Harris, with a special thanks to Maura Curry. Editorial help from Paola De Verona. Daisy Rosario is senior supervising producer, and Alicia Montgomery is Slate's VP of audio. I'm your Dear Prudence, Janae Desmond Harris. Until next time.